podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Previously on Planet FPL.
I was concerned with what I saw at the end of the game. Some of our players were dead on their feet, absolutely dead on their feet. Antonio especially. I wouldn't advise anyone to go near Antonio.
Really?
He looked done. He looked done. Hello everybody and welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. My name's Serge.
And my name is James.
We are recording on Monday. There's still one game left to go tonight. Manchester United, Southampton. But nine games down and we're nearly at the end of game week 35, James.
Soon came round, didn't it, mate? How's your game week?
Let's start with me for a change. Yeah, sure. Disappointment, to be honest with you, in a lot of ways. I mean, the first game of the game week being West Ham 4 Norwich 0 was still not an enjoyable watch because I don't think in my FPL life I've owned two West Ham defensive assets ever. I don't think I ever have. And so watching a West Ham game, despite winning 4-0, even the last 5 or 10 minutes, when honestly we were coasting, was still a nerve-wracking experience because I didn't want to lose my two clean sheet points. And that was the start of my bench boost. So I thought, you know what? Okay, 6 points from Aaron Creswell. He's done his job. He can fuck off to third place on my bench now. Job done. And the rest of the week was okay. Foden got benched. You know what? It is what it is. It means he might start the next game. And Foden's there that he can stay with my team for a little while. So I'm not worried about Phil Foden so much. Martinez, I mean, we'll talk about the Spurs-Arsenal game. If you want to talk about Arsenal gifting away goals, useless they are. But he picked up a couple of save points, which was decent. And had Leicester done what they should have done, it would have actually worked out okay. I think Soyuncu getting sent off yesterday was a 10-point swing. That's just a kick in the nuts. That would has turned my bench boost from acceptable to disastrous.
You described Soyuncu as turning your bench boost into a gangbang.
Yeah, it was disastrous because the difficulty, and obviously most players will know as well, right? If you get sent off, the goals conceded still keep racking up against you. So he ended up with what could have been a +6 ended up being a -3 or what have you. That's a 9-point swing that completely destroyed my bench boost. So in a week where I thought I might get 10, 15 points clear of you, you are now sitting a couple of points clear of me. Having said that, I mean, there's still a game to go, right? Martial bangs a couple of goals today. Then it could be a very different ending to the game week. And I'm still on a green arrow, so I'm not complaining. But it was a bit flat, I'll be honest with you, James. At the end of it, it all ended up becoming a little bit flat. In a week where Jesus scored, Jimenez scored, I got points from Robertson, points from Doherty, points from Fabianski. Feels funny to be saying it's still a bit flat, but it is.
Yeah, look, I mean, you're on 56, which if you actually, what you're going to end up with from your bench boost is actually 7 points. So, yeah. But even still, a score of 49 so far this game week would be pretty good. You now trail me by 3 points, essentially. We've both got three players still to go tonight, but it's your Anthony Martial versus my Harry Maguire. So you can very easily take the lead again tonight, particularly if Southampton score and Martial goes off, right? Could actually swing quite big.
Yeah, it could. I don't like these ifs and buts, but the truth is, like, if you'd have said going into the last three game weeks of the season that we're going to be there or thereabouts within 5 points of each other, I mean, wow.
Oh, yeah, this is going to go to the wire. I'm on 57 for the week.
Yeah.
I sold Heung-min Son, and then he went mental, and I don't care.
I wouldn't call it mental. I wouldn't call it mental.
No, because the player that I brought in went mental, which was Raheem Sterling with a 21-pointer. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I just meant that Son's always capable of going off. I still never go back while that guy's in charge, but we'll get on to Tottenham a bit later. Yes, I am obviously in a very good mood this morning. You might be able to tell that my voice is not at its strongest because I did spend a good 2 hours roaring at the TV yesterday. But yeah, 57 for me. Doherty, clean sheet. Laporte, clean sheet. Robertson, goal. Sterling's hat-trick. Raul Jimenez, keep the faith, scored. Mm-hmm. And I've got Maguire, Greenwood and Captain Fernandez to go tonight. You've got Martial, Greenwood and Captain Fernandez to go tonight.
So, I mean, could be end up being a 70-pointer again this week, which would be nice. I mean, Bruno Fernandez, the gift that keeps giving, right? So,
Listen, he's reliable as hell, isn't he? He's put 100k on my ranks. I'm up to 201,000 tonight. And it's difficult to see that not getting slightly better tonight, bearing in mind I've got Bruno captain. I saw that only 30% of active teams are captained him this week.
Wow,
feels
okay.
Low. I mean, that's high, right, really?
Yeah.
But it's not as high as I thought it would be. No. So I think there's gains with Bruno tonight for captainers, potentially.
Yeah, for sure. So there we go. I mean, look, the bench boost ended up being a real pain in the arse, and it's a difficult one to play, the bench boost. It really increased my nerves. I didn't feel confident playing it, if you know what I mean, where you think, you know what, yeah, I've got a lot of points on the way here, and I didn't enjoy it either, but now it's gone. I can concentrate on the last three game weeks. I'm still really happy with my squad. At least 12 out of the 15, and Soyuncu's going to have to move on now because obviously he'll get suspended.
You're never going to be particularly confident using a bench boost on single game week players.
No.
Because of, particularly when you throw in the aspects of City rotation, etc. I mean, what you have to do with that is the City guys that get rotated are probably still going to get your 1 point. So your bench boost is your bench boost, right? Soyuncu was part of your bench boost. I feel a little bit responsible for the fact that I thought, yeah, and I said to you, I think in your position, I'd go to Leicester defensively. And I would have done the same.
That's not responsible. No, not really, because you shouldn't feel responsible.
Listen, I'm laughing my head off at you. Don't make mistakes.
Bournemouth scoring four goals is unpredictable at the slightest. But it's not even that. It's Soyuncu losing his head and kicking Callum Wilson is completely unpredictable. He's not a dirty player that's been getting sent off week in, week out.
What we would describe as a David Luiz 10 seconds there. Yeah. We'll come onto that when we do the game. But Soyuncu was my sky captain. So it all goes in roundabouts. And that's given me a major problem, which I'll talk about on Wednesday.
What was the alternative, right? I was going to keep Lascelles, who Watford scored two. And sure, he would have scored more than Soyuncu. But if I'd have kept Lascelles, then the Leicester player that I wanted to go to was Harvey Barnes. And I had a good chat with Aaron Lager, our Leicester correspondent, about Harvey Barnes and the likelihood that Harvey Barnes would play, mainly because he hadn't been starting the game since the restart. And Aaron had said to me, this is the value of the correspondence, right? He said to me that based on Leicester's current formation, they preferred Albrighton because he tracked back a little bit more and he didn't think Harvey Barnes would play. So I said, all right, fine. Harvey Barnes doesn't play, then I'll go to Leicester defensively, which is Soyuncu. So then what do I do with my money? And that's when Foden became a decent option, not just for the bench boost, but for the remaining 3 weeks.
That's a great shout from Aaron. And I can tell you that on our Patreon Slack channel, Aaron was raging last night with what happened to them.
Disaster.
Yeah, his advice is forget them.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny, like, look, we all have opinions, right? What happened this game week? A lot of people saying Sterling's a good shout. Sure, you didn't think Sterling was going to come in with a hat trick. And Antonio as well. Like I said it last week, Thursday, and it's one of those where I stand by what I said. At the end of Burnley, he looked dead. He was on his knees, panting, puffing, lying down on his back. He looked dead. The thing was that I could have scored against Norwich. They put it on a plate for him. I think he had to run a combined total of about 20 metres for all four goals that he'd scored because they'd made it that easy. But I didn't expect that performance out of him based on what I saw at the end of the Burnley game at all.
No, I don't think you'd ever be in a position where you're expecting more than one return from Antonio. I think I think there were five people triple captained Antonio. I mean, good luck with your life. They're probably all brand new teams, by the way, setting up 50 new accounts every week. But you also said you wouldn't advise anyone to get
that. And there you go. Like, anyone that did buy him wasn't expecting four goals, and anyone that didn't would have gone to Bowen or Pulisic or whoever. there you go. And
no, I also said that I would still prefer Burien as the choice. And if I had to buy one this week, I might still buy Burien, ironically, in an odd roundabouts way, because I just think, well, you've missed that now.
Yep.
And people still pile into him. Oh my God, Antonio scored four. Got another good fixture this week, which West Ham do. But I'll urge some caution onto that when we come onto the games. In fact, we might as well start with them, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose it was difficult. When we start the week with a 4-0 win, it gave us that real nice cushion. Anything that could have happened in my FPL team after that was whatever, really, because my team have won and we've won really well. But then everybody else has winning since has made that win seem a lot less valuable all of a sudden. It's like it was a routine. We had to win as opposed to we've won and given ourselves any kind of breathing room and cushion. But all I would say is that, honestly, we should have been wearing the gold and green kit because Norwich made us look like Brazil, and that's saying something.
That really takes some doing.
They are going down because they are not good.
No, and there's scope to keep attacking them, isn't there? Obviously, look,
it's
going to be one of the major debates for this coming game week is Chelsea, because obviously they play Norwich on Tuesday. I've held a long-held belief that Chelsea will probably rotate in this fixture, but actually, with how bad that was for Chelsea on Saturday at Bramall Lane, that they now might not necessarily, by the way. And then obviously Norwich play Burnley. We've spoken about, you know, Chris Wood got back in the Burnley team at Anfield on Saturday. Could that be great for 37? You could go, if you're without chips, you go Wood for the last two versus Norwich and Brighton, for example, could be a brilliant little differential. And then it's Man City for Norwich on the final day as well, when hopefully as well people are going to be praying they're going to get team news. So I think you're going to get a lot of, let's say the, I can't think of the right term, but they're going to wait last minute. A lot of the players who are really into the game are going to be holding their nerve to as late as possible for this game week, and I think particularly game week 38 as well, because of Norwich and the possible information that may come in. And I can't sit here and advise anybody and say, don't get a Chelsea asset this week. I mean,
no.
That just wouldn't really make sense. I mean, if you see, if I see Pulisic is playing, for example, I might decide I want to dive into that myself. So I need to have a strong think myself. I think I'm probably going to avoid it, because my instinct is still that they don't need to play these guys. Yeah. If there's going to be a rest for the Pulisic, the Williams and that, then I think this could be now. But then you think things like, is someone like Marcus Alonso worth a real big punt for one game week if you see he's in that team with a high probability of a clean sheet and you know that he can score in any game, and he's the most likely to pull the rabbit out of the hat of the 15-pointer or something, isn't he?
Is he
then perfect for that situation where you're happy with your squad to go someone like Marcus Alonso if you see he's playing? So people are going to hold their nerve till late, I think.
From a West Ham point of view, I mean, we played well and we were clinical, and there were periods in the second half we kept the ball well. It was an enjoyable performance to watch, other than having Creswell. Even in the first half, Creswell got forward and put a few crosses in. I thought, you know what, you never know, he might pick up an assist here. Norwich just made us look really good. But the irony is now that we've got Watford, Man United, Villa, the Watford-Villa games, we have to get something out of. It's not like we can just coast through these and pick up the odd draw. The thing with both the Watford and Villa games is I trust Watford and Villa's mentality more than I trust our own. Backs against the wall, they need results as well. I feel like they could come and bring the fight more than we will take the fight to them. In a strange way, I'm glad that there's something riding on this Watford game, because had Villa and Bournemouth both lost yesterday and then lost these games as well, we could have gone into the Watford game with a draw, pretty much saving both of us, giving us enough points clear with the goal difference that we wouldn't need to get anything out of the game. And that's a dangerous mentality to be in, where you're just coasting a little bit. So there's something riding on the Watford game now, but I'm not any more confident piling into any West Ham assets.
So am I right in saying, as it stands now, you're what, 3 points clear of Bournemouth and two of Villa? Is that how it stands
at the moment? Three of Bournemouth and four of Villa, isn't it?
Yeah, is that what I said?
Yes, you're two of Villa. But yeah,
sorry,
three or four
of Villa. That's what I meant, yeah.
And then factor in our goal differences much, much better.
Now, Bournemouth go next. They play Manchester City on Wednesday. We obviously, you can't look beyond City beating them, right? No. In spite of what happened last night at the Vitality. Villa play at Everton. I think it's either the same time or on Thursday. I think it's on Thursday, isn't it? 6 o'clock. Yeah. I just wonder if Villa lose and then it maintains the 3-point gap over Bournemouth and the 4 over Villa, whether West Ham and Watford would look at that Friday with a stronger goal difference and think, what's the chances of Villa and Bournemouth being able to win the two games to catch? Because essentially, if Villa and Bournemouth get beat this week and West Ham and Watford draw, the two of them have got to win their last two to stay up.
Correct.
And I just wonder, bearing in mind West Ham play Watford on Friday, if, and this would be controversial, if the two teams would be quite happy in certain circumstances to have a draw between them.
Had Villa and Bournemouth drawn or lost yesterday, I would have put 100 quid on West Ham Watford being a draw, mate. Because it would have been in both of our interests to basically keep us up to, with a draw. Now that those guys won, I think it's less likely to be colluded to be a draw, but it is in both
of our interests. We're talking about collusion here in terms of the integrity of our league.
The intensity of the game will be a lot less.
Yes, I think we're talking about the possibility here of a no-frills, no... Put it this way, I think both teams would start the game with the intention to win the game, but I think if you get to the point where we get into the second half and it's still 0-0, for example, then I don't know. It's in both teams' interest to know that a draw is nearly going to have you safe.
Mm.
Nearly have you safe.
And it is
But Bournemouth are the more likely of the two to win their last two games, which is Southampton and Everton with nothing to play for. And if they have got players in the team who can score goals. Mm. So I would favour them a little bit more than Villa personally, playing Arsenal. And then obviously Villa play yourselves.
Yeah.
So I think the best result for Villa and Bournemouth would be a Watford win, would be my opinion. Just purely because you then play Manchester United in game week 37. And you can look at it and say, Game week 37 and 38, Watford have two nightmare fixtures, right? In Arsenal at the Emirates and then... Manchester City and then Arsenal at the Emirates on the final day. You don't see Watford getting any more points either. But I think particularly for Villa, the idea to know that if they can shoot at you in game week 38 and beat you to overtake you, that's where they want to be, right?
Of course, exactly.
I just think that Villa can't beat Arsenal in game week 37. I just don't think they've got enough quality. I also don't think they'll beat Everton this week as well. And I think we could get into a scenario Friday where both teams would be very happy with a draw and it will near enough finish the job.
Any thoughts on... let's go to the Watford-Newcastle game. Troy Deeney popping up...
Would you advise people to buy Antonio or not? Just yes or no?
Yeah. Do it.
Yeah.
For those of you that want my confirmation bias to say yes, buy Antonio, do it, buy him. And for those of you that want reassurance that you've missed the boat, yeah, don't buy Antonio. It's a waste of your time. I've covered both bases there. And for those of you that want to sit on the fence, sit on the fence. Norwich was so compliant, mate. It's so compliant.
I feel bad for like Mark, FPL Badger and some of our Norwich followers because it's just ended so tamely for them. We've spoken about it before. They'll be in a stronger position than potentially the other two that come down the championship next year because of where they're at financially. They've got assets they can sell that will put money into the club and still have some good players.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they've got anyone there that's particularly tens of millions. Like you might get 15 to 20 for your Max Aaronses of the world and
They're definitely in a position to be claiming 20 million for Aaron's on that, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a difficult position right back because there's a lot of talent and depth. But the thing I liked about West Ham, I'll be honest with you, is even though we were winning 4-0, the last 5-10 minutes, we were still pressing and could have got a fifth and stuff. We were still high up the pitch, Declan Rice and Bowen and stuff. We're still closing players down and when Masuaku came on. So attitude-wise, that's what I was like, okay, at least you're still pressing and still pushing in the last 5-10 minutes of the game. So
I think West Ham are lookable from an FPL perspective of those who have no chips left. and for those who have strong bench cover to cover what you're probably going to want to leave it out against Manchester United in game week 37. But the other two are appealing, right? Antonio, obviously, particularly, we've seen that. Yeah, look, he can do bits. If you want to buy him this week, I don't hate it. I just suspect that game on Friday will be very low scoring.
And let's talk about Watford 2, Newcastle 1. Troy Deeney popped up with two goals. I've got a cousin who is a very good FPL player. He's ranked 20K, came back after the restart. Of the 4 weeks that we've been playing, 2 weeks hadn't bothered changing his team because he hadn't been that engaged with FPL post-restart. Has only dropped 7K to 27K, but decided to take a punt this week and sell Raul Jimenez for someone that might be a differential. Of all the players he picked, he decided to go with Troy Deeney.
My goodness.
Came in with, it's like, you're mad. You and me would say he's mad. He's sitting at 20K, so I can't really argue with the logic.
No, I don't at the moment. I'm just wondering who your cousin is and why I'm not podcasting with him.
20K. Incredible for Troy Deeney to pop up with a couple of goals, and Watford must be so happy with that result and that victory.
This was a really interesting watch. I obviously knew you'd be watching West Ham, so I chose to watch this game. And
Forced into it.
No, to be honest, it was the game that I wanted to watch when I was doing my deadline stream. I looked at the teams and I was interested with how Newcastle might have been changing systems, so that's why I tuned in. But it was just a case of Fabian Schär playing in midfield. Newcastle were value for their lead at half time, but Watford really stepped up the tempo second half. And once they equalised, it was only ever going to be one winner. You could see it coming. Both penalties were soft, in my opinion. Both of them, I think they're marginal calls, whether they are or they're not. My opinion would be, look, then the on-field officials giving them okay, but I think they would, I put it this way, if they were given against me, I wouldn't be very happy about them. And Deeney's just no frills in that sense that he just smashes down the middle with them. There'd be much, what they did on Saturday as well is obviously they kept the same team that beat Norwich, which is better with, and in hindsight, I can see now why Welbeck didn't play at Chelsea, for example, and stuff like that, because anything there's the bonus. The priority was winning those two games, and I maintained before Norwich that I thought they would win those two games, and they've just about done enough. They were better on Saturday, ironically, than they were against Norwich, in my opinion, the way they played second half. Never fret with that front three, actually, of Welbeck, Sarr and Deeney in the middle and Decore joining in. I think they'll be fine. I mean, I think you'll be fine as well. I still can't see Villa and Bournemouth doing enough in spite of wins yesterday. In terms of looking at Watford assets, you're absolutely not. You would have been doing this time last week, so you wouldn't be looking now. I think
with their last two fixtures, forget about it.
I think if you've got, you can certainly hold for West Ham on Friday, particularly if you've got a defence. Like, if you've got a Femenia or something, he's such cheap value, you could just leave him there anyway, put him on the bench, whatever. But I think if you've got Sarr, etc., this week will probably be your last week, and you want to look at something else, I think, for example. Newcastle are now. Although Dwight Gower is 4.2.
It's cheap.
He's another cheap forward. He's doing all right, actually. Mm. And he's always been someone. I know he got heavily ridiculed after the miss against Man City in the Cup quarterfinal. But he's always been someone between the posts, can finish, actually. And I guess he's keeping the shirt at the moment. But, I mean, could you justify going for him over Greenwood or even... And Ketcher's going to be back for Arsenal's last two fixtures, which look appealing. So,
yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't favour Dwight Gale over any of them.
No, definitely not. Liverpool 1, Burnley 1. Pope owners, you benched him. But yeah, Pope owners, your clean sheets didn't come this time round. Other Burnley didn't do badly, to be honest with you. But ultimately, Robertson's header, it's one of those, people did gush about it. It was class. It's such a hard header to pull off, like one of the hardest types of header to score with, really, like looping power, the distance it had to cover, phenomenal header.
Great header. Yeah, I mean, from that position it's a free header, but in that position from that far out for a header, you're probably only going to put that away one in every 20 or so.
Yeah, he's got it, the neck muscles, got it to get it right.
He's got it absolutely perfect. Goalkeeper's got no chance. He had a brilliant game in goal, Nick Pope. Really, really good. I was doing my Champ Man stream at the same time while trying to watch the game, and it just felt like he was saving everything. There's a lot of guys was in the chat while I was doing that saying, like, he should be England's number one now. And
that's how it was against us as well. Dominated the box.
I strongly disagree with that opinion because I just think he's way too weak with his feet generally. When for Burnley, he doesn't have to do anything but go long. And I think distribution is so important for most teams in modern football. Burnley are happy to get the ball into the final third quickly and then do their thing from there. Then they'll play. But they're not, you know, very rarely is he going to be rolling the ball out to Tarkowski and the like. They just don't. They get it into the final third of the pitch and then play. Liverpool could have won this game twice over in the first hour because they had so many chances. And actually, I thought Liverpool played quite well in the first half. Movement, tempo of play, everything was a bit better. If Liverpool had been 3-0 up at half-time, nobody would have batted an eyelid or anything. Mm. And yet, in the end, Burnley could have nicked it, man, when Goodmanson hit the bar and that. It's a brilliant finish from Jay Rodriguez. And they're just very good at what they do, Burnley. Very, very good. Never say die attitude. They've still got a sniff of Europe. And actually, the final three for them of Wolves at home, Norwich and Brighton, I think means that Burnley really should be on our radars differential here for the running. And I really like Chris Wood as a differential shout for those who are sitting on value. You know, if you want to move off Jimenez, I wouldn't make that move this week. But if that's what you're thinking, you've got frustrations, I think someone at Wood's value is great, you know. And I think he's about 6.1. He'll really facilitate other things. Defensively, you can look at them. Those who haven't been on Nick Pope are probably going to have more regret over the next three game weeks, I should imagine. Tarkowski, it's fine. Charlie Taylor is fine. Wolves, put it this way, if Burnley kept a clean sheet against Wolves, you wouldn't be surprised, would you?
No, not at all. I've seen them defend. Their body's on the line, but they do shut down the space. They do shut down the balls coming into the box. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Burnley will be quite happy for Wolves to have the ball.
If Wolves won 2-0, you wouldn't be surprised either, is worth saying.
Yeah, but I wouldn't expect Wolves to have 20 chances in the game. I'd expect them to have just a handful, and Raul Jimenez being the sniper that he is might convert 2 out of the 5 chances that they have or something like that. It's not going to be a very open game, in my opinion. Let me ask you a question on Chris Wood, right?
Okay.
So a lot of Raul Jimenez owners, quite a few moved away this week and went up to Jamie Vardy. A lot were riding out another week and then thinking that now that tonight's game gets out of the way, Danny Ings is the way to go from Raul Jimenez for the last three. If you had the choice right now and you're moving away from Jimenez, which is the move that a lot of people are thinking about doing, would you go to Wood or Ings?
Gabriel Jesus.
Okay, he's more expensive. He's more expensive.
I say that because that's probably what I'm going to end up doing personally. Wood or Ings for the final three? I think if you compare it like that, I don't think you could look beyond Danny Ings. Mm. But actually, from game week 37, I think Wood edges it. Actually, yeah, this week Ings, but I think if you go game week 37, and bear in mind that Ings has got Sheffield United final game, I think Wood then edges it. I think he'll return in these last few games. If you were free hitting in game week 37, bearing in mind what you saw on Saturday, and Burnley play Norwich, and you were free hitting 37, how many Burnley players would you have?
3.
Yes, so would I.
Pope and maybe one other defensively. Well, if budget's not really an option, so Pope, McNeil and Wood, I think would be the three that I'd go to. Dwight McNeil's still decent in the middle of the pitch and can run the game. Yeah, I'd either be too defensive and with the safety of the clean sheet, or if I fancied it, one goalkeeper, midfielder and an attacker. But Chris Wood, Pope, and then a defender.
I'd be Pope, Charlie Taylor, Wood.
Charlie Taylor because of the value, potentially.
Yeah, and you play him, and then it would just facilitate other big hitters. And of course, 37 is awkward because you've got some of these big hitters, like United City, who are obviously playing FA Cup semi-finals before their midweek games, and that just muddies the water. So, I mean, if you've got Burnley assets genuinely in your team in 37, I would strongly consider vice-captaining them, genuinely, just to get you out of a hole, any concerns, FA Cup semi-final injuries, that kind of thing. And I think that's fine. Pope, genuinely, in game 37, will probably be my vice-captain as a little bit of security, I think.
Interesting.
And I genuinely, Chris Wood would be an amazing differential captain pump for 37. You'll get the team as well, probably, from Rockstar.
Yeah. Sheffield United 3, Chelsea 0. Credit to Sheffield United here for coming back. And this boy, David McGoldrick, manages to get his first. Him and Solanke, would you believe it? Two players this weekend that haven't scored a goal all season managed to get themselves on the score sheet twice. Incredible. But yeah, McGoldrick steals the headlines. Chelsea defensively still a concern. Now you're thinking, well, Leicester were throwing it away yesterday as well. But the race for the top four, Manchester United are clearly in pole position now because of their form, whereas the others have been dropping points. Defensively, Chelsea always a concern.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I don't know where to start with this one from Chelsea. First thing I want to say on Sheffield United, I see a lot of Sheffield United fans getting the hump when people say they work hard. Listen, it is a basic of football, but you do it so very, very well every week. Take it as a compliment, because Chelsea didn't at the weekend. And listen, if one team turns up and wants to leave themselves on the pitch in this league, they're like very likely to beat the other team who look disinterested. It's interesting to reflect back on what I said on the previous podcast about Jorginho in the last 10 minutes of Crystal Palace. Once they saw he was playing, they absolutely systematically targeted him, that they were going to bully the fuck out of him, mate. And they did. And then from there, they played their football. They press extremely well. Teams just cannot cope with what Sheffield United do in wide areas. They cannot cope with it because nobody else plays the way they do. And I don't... Teams must, surely, in my opinion, this was my major annoyance with Mourinho when we played them, 9 days to prepare, and they still scored 3 goals like that. To be fair, same's happened at the weekend. You might argue Chelsea were worse than we were against them as well. But teams just still seem absolutely shocked when they end up in positions where Sheffield United have got 4 players in wide areas against 2 or 3, and they're getting outdone. And eventually they pick the pocket and they get the cross in. And that's the source of so many goals for them. Teams can't find a way to adapt to play against them because nobody else plays the same way. And I just don't understand why nobody's quite figured it out yet to try and we're going to man-mark the wing-backs. Or what I'd really love to see is split forwards, man-mark the 2 wide centre-halves and literally stay with them and say, fine, do you know what? We're going to let Egan step out. Let's see what you can do now. That's how I'd set up against them. That's what I naively thought Mourinho was going to do when we played against them. Teams can't cope with them. They're in an amazing position in the league. Leicester, Everton, Southampton. 3 wins. They will be in Europe next year. You'd almost fancy them against Leicester now this week, even though it's at the King Power with what happened to Leicester the other night.
Yeah, I mean,
Sheffield United is not the team you want to walk into, mate.
Leicester are a very difficult one to call now. I thought, you know what, they might have turned the corner and straight away they disappoint like they did yesterday. Chelsea, the question on a lot of people's lips is now going to be around Mr. Pulisic. He came off early for Giroud, early being there was a good half an hour still left on the clock when he came off. And so is it a concern that he's not going to be in the team for Norwich? And do people ride it out? We've had good points off him for 3 or 4 weeks. But he's not been the most consistent all season.
I would read that as a massive positive for Tuesday.
That he will personally get minutes now.
I would read it as a positive.
FPL is about timing, right? Knowing when to come off and when to come on, the right players at the right time. And players that do well are the ones that are 1 game or 2 games a little bit earlier. And I've always got a concern with Pulisic that is it the time to come off him before he ends up in a run of no returns and blanks for quite a while?
Oh, it's next week before they play Liverpool, right? They finished with Liverpool Wolves. So after Norwich, it almost looks like an easy sell if you're on, really. It's not to say he can't return in them games, but if you talk about timing, which I think is so essential in FPL management, yeah, you're not going to sell this week. Even if he was on the bench. I tell you what would be interesting is what people do if they see the team and he's a sub.
Yeah.
Because I would be very tempted to leave him in the team still, actually. And think that he'll play the last half hour and he might still do damage.
Yeah, my first substitute now is Phil Foden, though, who didn't play and came off the bench, which means obviously he's about my, based on Pep's rotation, maybe he'll start. Would I start Foden this week ahead of Pulisic? Quite
no
possibly.
Chance. No.
You don't think so?
No, mate, no.
Yeah, you're
find,
right.
Find right. a different solution.
No, you are right, but I'm not so convinced as you are about Pulisic. But we may know the team, so we'll be able to make that.
Everybody seems absolutely convinced that Phil Foden plays this week, and they're probably right. But I also think Phil Foden plays against Arsenal in the FA Cup semi-final because that's their most important game, and I think Phil Foden is now a part of Manchester City's best 11. So I wouldn't bank on it as a certainty that Phil Foden starts on Wednesday. Listen, put the names in a fucking hat and draw them out. That's your best thing to do with City. The only ones that seem to be completely readable at the moment are the defensive ones. Guardiola said there'd be six changes. I bet four of them are the back four.
Yeah, quite possibly. Let's talk about City while we're there. Brighton 0, City 5. I asked you a question on the pod on Friday. Are Brighton still going to get slapped? Well, basically, they still got slapped.
I did say yes in the end, didn't I?
You did, yeah. And you can't deny it, right? I'm very happy with my Jesus returns, having a bit of patience with him. Now he's pulled in an 8-pointer and a 14-pointer. I'm not moving away from him for the rest of the season. But I saw a lot of people go to Raheem Sterling. You did from Heung-Min Son because you had the money. Quite a few people were going from Kevin De Bruyne to Raheem Sterling, and that proved to be particularly good as well. Jesus hit the bar. I mean, they could have scored so many more goals. Same situation as you were in a week ago with the Newcastle game. Whoever got the returns. Roll the dice again against Bournemouth, and it's going to be another 5-0. And this time it could be three goals for Kevin De Bruyne, an assist for Rodrigo, and whatever.
Rodrigo.
It could be anything, right? You just don't know, so just take it.
Ah, a joy to watch again, as they so often are. I'm not going to bore people with that
The second half, there was a period, I lost track of the count of the passes, but it was just pass. But they could do it. But they didn't do it. So there was a period in the Manchester United game against Villa where they were knocking the ball around, but they were doing it slowly. Like, it wasn't as enjoyable to watch. It was literally like, this is a training match where you guys are just knocking the ball around. When City pass the ball around in those periods of play, they do it with an intensity that feels like they are working an angle or doing it to build up to something, whereas other teams quite often are just knocking it around because they're just knocking it around and killing time. But when they pass the ball around, it's just, yeah, different.
They're rate. Waiting for a mistake to kill you.
Yeah.
Is what they do. And watched them against Newcastle as well. I mean, the football they played in the first 20 minutes against Newcastle, when I realised it was a Newcastle team that started with, you know, Shelvey very high, basically a flat 4-4-2 that got completely exposed, admittedly, but it was scintillating. They went to kill them. My dad made a good remark, so I watched the game with him Saturday night, and he said what he really likes about City is that they play the same way whether they're winning 1-0 or 4-0. And it did feel like that. It was like, yeah, okay, all right, we don't need to play with quite the intensity at this stage of the game. You're playing with your heads a little bit more, save a little bit of energy. You don't need to go mad in transitions if you lose the ball, for example, which they so rarely do, especially against teams like that with respect to Brighton. But yeah, they're just waiting for their moment to kill you. And know that eventually, mentally, you're going to be fatigued and they will get you.
Yeah, the problem with every time Brighton picked up the ball, it was four or five passes before City got the ball back. And you're like, they'll keep it for about 100 passes consecutively and you keep it for five or six.
The 100 passes of keeping it as well means that when they do lose the ball, they have the energy to hunt you and hunt you quick. Yeah. And I feel like they are priming themselves massively for what they're going to do next season. I think they're really right now back into the groove. I know they lost at Southampton, but it was a freak result in my opinion. Really back into the groove of being very close to what we saw at periods last season. Perhaps, yes, we shouldn't judge against Brighton, Newcastle sides who've had not a lot to play for and other teams they've played against. But they are tearing it up again. And in terms of assets for this week, so my plan, as I said pre-last week, Laporte plays against Brighton. Thank you very much. See you later. I've got that right. So now he's going to go. I've still got the two free transfers. I have Sterling and De Bruyne. couple of ways I can do this. So Laporte's going to a 3.9. Anyone, doesn't matter. I can either go like Traore to Mahrez. I think I've just about got enough. But I'm more likely to go Jimenez to Jesus, I think is the way I'm going to go. If I go the other way, I've got a massive selection headache, which I can't be leaving Raul Jimenez out if he's in my squad. So I'd rather just go, thank you very much for the weekend return. I'm going to go Jesus. And the reason I think I'm going to go Jesus as well is if Jesus only gets half hour on Wednesday, half hour against Watford, and then plays against Norwich, for example, I think he'll get two or three goals. That's just where I'd take it. My thoughts on the City assets now are, there are four power players: De Bruyne, Mahrez, Sterling, and Jesus. And what I mean by the power players is they could consecutively put together serious hauls, for example.
Double-digit returns, yeah.
And that's why I favour this more than Foden. I know Foden's had some good hauls. He's an amazing value price. But I just favour the other guys to go more mental, basically, like Sterling did on Saturday. I mean, the final goal was funny as, but I just favour that. If you're asking me, is Foden going to have good consistent returns between now and the end of the season, and will he probably play against Bournemouth this week? The answer is yes. Do I think Jesus will play this week? 50-50 call. But I think I'm ready to take the chance. My instinct is that Jesus won't play against Arsenal. That's my instinct. I think at the moment it's just for him, while Aguero's out, maintaining his confidence of scoring in games. And in the other games, he's obviously very likely to do it. Not that he should fear Arsenal in any particular way, as we'll come on to. But I'm that's the chance I'm going to take. That Arsenal is the best preparation for Real Madrid, yep, in terms of the quality of opposition they've got left. And the fact that Arsenal will play with most likely with a three at the back in the Cup semi-final, I foresee City absolutely flooding the fuck out of them in midfield and just completely overrunning Ceballos and Xhaka in that area, if they played like David Silva and De Bruyne as in the positions they played against Chelsea, for example, Arsenal will not see the ball. And I think that's the way we'll go in the semi-final. And that leads me to think that Jesus has a stronger chance of starting this week than perhaps others think. And do you know what? Selfishly, from a mini-league position, it will also block you off. I wouldn't rule out the possibility of me captaining Jesus this week even.
My armband's already on Jesus in my bus team. Yeah, I've just stuck it on.
Very much depends on what I see with Manchester United tonight. If they're winning comfortably again and Bruno and the like all go off at 70 minutes, then I think I'll just stick with Bruno again, because Palace are wank as well, mate.
Yeah, they are. The difference between us in the mini league between now and the last 3 weeks is literally going to be down to captaincies. Like, if one of us has a captain that pulls in a 30-point return, that's what's going to be the difference, in my opinion.
If you say you're captaining Jesus, I might not buy him.
Well,
I might change that and go to Mahrez.
It's my bus team, so I'm not in any way set on what I'm going to be doing yet.
I'm still going to buy him then.
it's going to be tricky now. To see. So let's move on to the Sunday games yesterday. We did say Everton T-Rex versus Rex. They were Rex. Wolves scored in the first half of a game. I was shocked, James. It was just, right at the end. Just. It was right at the end, but they scored in the first half of a game. And that was that, really. I'm not looking at any Everton assets. Wolves... Doherty still, because of his clean sheets, is providing consistent returns, and he could pop up with an attacking return. Traore, a lot of people have moved away from. It's now Jimenez to Jimenez or not to Jimenez.
If you've got no pressing issues, and you could argue that I've got no pressing issues, but I'm going to take a big chunk of value back in my squad this week that allows me to go Jimenez to Jesus. And I just think for the final three on an overall, I think that's the right play for me. But Burnley and Crystal Palace in the next two, and even Chelsea in the last game, actually look at the way they defend, which we didn't really talk about, but that could be a podcast in itself. So bad. You shouldn't have any fear about keeping Raul Jimenez. I was very insistent on my opinion of keeping him this week before Everton, playing against fucking Rex. Jesus Christ. Like, a toothless dinosaur coming at you, mate, and he doesn't even step forward either. So, yeah. Literally so bad. I mean, they had players there that gave up. There was one where Pickford nearly fumbled it over the line. Luca Dean, oh my God, I'd have dragged him straight off the pitch. It's disgraceful. They've changed system here. It was no better. I can't remember Richarlison having a kick, and it's not a particular slight on him, by the way. I can't remember him being in the game. Calvert-Lewin had one header towards the end of the game. They are so bad in midfield. So, so bad. It's always the easy option that they take. Change of system didn't help. They've lost Yerry Mina as well, potentially to injury, although Holgate might be back for this game week. And so, to answer a question that I'm sure we probably got in there somewhere in the questions, would you still look at Everton assets this week? Yes, I would. Yeah, I would. Yeah, unbelievably, yeah, because I just look at it and go, in the final three fixtures, they've got Villa and Bournemouth, and Sheffield United's the one in the middle, which right now you wouldn't see them getting anything from. It's not a Goodison, by the way. But I think defensively, ironically, there's returns in there. And I wouldn't be surprised if Calvert-Lewin or Richarlison goes off in one of them games. Generally. Villa at a point now where Villa can't go to Goodison on Thursday and play for a draw. It's not enough. They've got to come out. And we've seen in games where if Everton can set it up properly, and Ancelotti's a good manager, right? No one's questioning. Then they can do Villa quickly on the break, I think, if they go a little bit more direct into Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin a bit quicker, and I think they will. So I think, madly, yeah, I still think they're really good options this week. Richarlison, Calvert-Lewin, Dean, I wouldn't cut corners on it if you're thinking about it. But yeah, I think it's okay. It's not going to work out for me, I don't think, in terms of being able to fit it in, because I need to shift Laporte and I need to use the other free transfer to get another City asset in. So I can't see it being for myself, but I don't mind it. I really don't mind going into them. Sometimes you just got to look at it and go, yeah, all right, they're dog shit, they're crap. But just take a look at what's left and know that if Everton kept three clean sheets in the final three games, I wouldn't fall over laughing. That's my point here. And if they're going to have attacking returns, Dean's well capable of being in it. We know that.
Yeah, 5.8 million is still a little bit too much for me. I'm not really looking at any Everton assets at the moment. I'll need a replacement for Soyuncu, but I don't think I'll have the money to look at Michael Keane. When I sell Raul Jimenez, the player I'm thinking of buying it is Aubameyang for the last two of the season. It's a really good two good fixtures. So if I lose Christian Pulisic down to 4.1 or 4.2, something along those lines. There's only Mattia Guendouzi actually at that price. But then I can afford Aubameyang, or I downgrade Soyuncu and then I can afford a half decent midfielder and get Aubameyang as well. So Jimenez for me, if I sell him, it will be for Aubameyang, which I think is a good shout for the last two fixtures. I know the only annoying thing is 37s before the FA Cup. And then after. Place C.
The deadline's before the FA Cup. Yeah.
So, frustratingly, whether or not he'll get the minutes, I'll have to think about. But he probably will. Probably will.
Yeah, I don't mind that, because I think if you look at players in terms of who's capable of catching Vardy, you probably... that Salah could go off, but I don't expect him to. Or Bamyang in those last two could put five goals on the board, for example, and give himself a shot. Danny Ings over the three games obviously stays involved as well. But I think, you know, it's going to take some serious damage for someone to catch Vardy now. And I think... you don't expect Vardy not to return, even though they've got, on paper, three difficult fixtures left Leicester.
Correct.
The concern I'd have with Aubameyang, and I don't hate that move, by the way, but I would just look at it and go, big game in the heat, yes, and it's worth saying about, it was a lot warmer yesterday.
Yeah.
It was hot, the time that Tottenham played, and that first half particularly was quite intense. The game shifted something very different in the second half, which we'll talk about. It was quite fast paced in that first half. Dattler taking something out the legs. They've got Liverpool on Wednesday, then City in the semi-final on Saturday, then 3 days to Villa. Could Arteta look at Villa if Vardy's got well clear and Aubameyang can't catch him? Could Arteta look at it and go, I ain't playing him, I'm going to kill him?
Yeah,
he has to work a lot harder in that wide position than he would do if he was playing through the centre, for example. Like against Man City, he's going to spend most of the game trying to probably chase Kyle Walker, for example. Like, that's going to take something out of your legs, mate.
Yeah, I think the thing is, though, if they lose against City, they'll have lost against you, lost against City. I think the fans will demand a reaction, and to get a result, they'll want their best player on the pitch. So I know the fans are really upset.
If Arsenal lose to Liverpool and lose to Manchester City, by the time the Villa game comes around, Arsenal fans are going to have no interest in what's left for their season.
Quite possibly, you're right. Let's talk about Aston Villa 2, Palace 0 briefly. Was Palace's little mini revival against Chelsea, where they banged in a couple of goals, just a random occurrence, and it's back to there's nothing to play for, no goals to be scored? I was surprised how few goals they've scored all season. I think it's 30 goals all season, Palace. It's nothing. It's got to be dull watching.
By the way, the last time we mentioned about someone, their scoring tally has been back. Sheffield United have scored 7 in 3, right? Against 3 supposedly on paper bigger clubs, right? They've done well. So, but yeah, with Villa, no, I just don't see the goals. And I know Trezeguet's got the 2 yesterday. And I thought, by the way, he took the first goal so well. That's a much harder finish than he made it look, because it was right into his body. Just took a little step to adjust and buried it. And he's taken the second goal well as well. I spent most of this game angry, really angry, because it was only a couple of hours till me expecting Tottenham to get fucking pissed all over. And the whole Mohamed Sakho goal was the trigger I needed to shout out the telly.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't, Suge. Help me out.
We have done so well since the restart in avoiding VAR on this podcast. I mean, considering the number of incidents there have been since the restart, we have spent very little time on this podcast talking about VAR. But the closer we get to the end of the season, the more annoying it is. They're getting more wrong than right.
The wrong here, and full credit to Michael Oliver, because he actually, barring the fact he should have given a few more yellow cards to Spurs players, he didn't referee the North London derby badly at all. He should not have been refereeing that game yesterday, following being the fourth official at Bournemouth Tottenham on Thursday. Because he knows, he has been told that he made the wrong decision and he cost Tottenham. He should not have been refereeing that game yesterday. It wasn't an incident in Arsenal's penalty box that could have been controversial. I'm telling you, if there was one, he would have given a penalty. And John Moss was doing the Villa game as fourth official 3 days after being told that he'd given a penalty against them that was also incorrect. What is that? You're making mistakes even in your appointments of officials. And guess what? John Moss decides to rule out a goal which, in my opinion, hit someone on the top of the shoulder. Let me explain to you.
It was on the top of the shoulder.
Let me explain to you just on fucking simple physics that if it hit his arm, the ball could not go back upwards. It's impossible. It's impossible.
Yeah, I mean, it would require some kind of spin on it.
It doesn't even matter what you think you've seen. I'm telling you, if it hits his arm anywhere below the point of the bone on your shoulder, then it can't go upwards.
Yeah.
What have you done?
It's mad.
It's made me so angry. Oh, my God. But Villa will think they're due one, but then Villa also had the Nyland goal against Sheffield United, right? So, I mean, swings abouts and all that is so bad. There has to be something there where we're questioning if this man's thinking in his mind when he's making that decision, I fucked them over on Thursday. Oh, I'll level this up a bit. Because that has not hit his arm. It's a perfectly good goal. I mean, he should head it in, but it's a perfectly good goal. There's nothing wrong with it.
We're not looking at
Palace assets, and we're also not looking at Villa assets. Villa did deserve to win, is worth saying. They were much better second half. Jack Grealish also, I mean, it's one of the worst dives I've ever seen. And what took them so long? It's another one the same. At least they made the right decision in analysing it this time.
Yeah. But it's a funny one there.
It's nothing against Villa. I hope Villa do well against Everton on Thursday and keep that relegation scrap going and interesting to the end. Just as a neutral, it's just so annoying. So annoying.
I don't think they're going to have enough quality, unfortunately, to stay up, but we'll see in the coming weeks. Let's talk about the NLD, North London Derby.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
Tottenham retain the bragging rights. Albeit, Arsenal should have won that game.
Really?
I think Arsenal should have won that game. I thought they were better over the course of the game. They played the better football. They had more of the possession. It felt a little bit smash and grab, but they make dumb mistakes. I think you did a bad job containing them, but they did have the better chances and they did have more of the game. But it just goes to show that clinical edge of pushing the game over the line. If Patrick Vieira had been playing yesterday in the middle of the pitch, I reckon Arsenal would have walked it. But they don't have that mentality, that leader in the middle that's like dragging them across the line.
I think a fair result would have been a draw. I think actually to split the two teams over the whole games. I mean, you say Arsenal had more possession. I mean, Spurs had 9 shots on target to Arsenal's 4.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean, if you want to go down the statistic route, then just looking at that one statistic, you'll go, well, Spurs deserve to win. Martinez has got 3 FPL points, mate, because he's made 7 saves.
7 saves, yeah.
So, yeah, you can use statistics however you want to, right? We always say that. People will interpret the data however they want to. The game was, what I couldn't believe at half time was that it'd been enjoyable. The first half was a good game of football, in my opinion. I think up until Lacazette scored, I thought we were the better side. We started really brightly. It helped that Lucas Moura had smashed one at goal, which Martinez had saved inside the first minute. So what I'd waited 105 minutes to see at Bournemouth, I had in 1 minute against Arsenal. So that made me think, remember when I used to talk about Pochettino used to say, he could tell in the first minute of games if Tottenham were going to win or not.
Yeah.
If Pochettino had been in charge, I'd have watched that first minute and went, we're winning today. Because it was straight away, it was up and at them. And I have to give the manager credit, right? I can't just bash the shit out of him. Because I said here on Friday on this podcast, play Son up front with Kane. And he did. And suddenly, Harry Kane's got an involvement in the game because he's got someone to play with. I mean, it would help his son pass to him a little bit more, but that's a different matter. But at least he had something with him, which took a bit of pressure off him personally. He grew into the game, Kane, particularly in the second half when Spurs went deeper and went from back to front a little bit more direct. But I thought we started well. Then, obviously, Lacazette scores a worldie, right? Which... it's a clanger from Serge Aurier, who had a disaster of a game. And shout out to him, by the way, because there's news coming out of France this morning that his brother was killed in Toulouse overnight.
Oh,
so if yeah, exactly. Horrible. So I don't want to go painting and criticising his performance. If you've got him, there's every chance he won't play again this season. I have no idea how that will react. So just follow the news on that. So shout out to Serge. But it's his error, and it only felt like it was his errors in the game also that was really letting Arsenal win.
He was quite wasteful with the ball as well. Whenever he picked it up on the right-hand side, I was like, that's going to hit the first man. That's going to hit the first man.
There was only one successful cross in the whole game from both teams, and that was Alderweireld's goal. And then we scored from a car crash moment that Arsenal were one of the only teams in the world that can provide it. Kolasinac, quite honestly, just has a ball into Tierney. And this is what I think happened with Kolasinac, because you have to ask yourself, why doesn't Kolasinac just play that simple ball into Tierney up the line rather than turn and go back towards Luiz? I think what happened was, it was an easy pass to Tierney, but he could see Sissoko was going out there. And I think what he didn't want was the ball back, because then the pressure was going to be on him second time around. Spurs were setting a little bit of a trap there to then go to the press with the ball. You know, a little bit like what we said Liverpool do so well. I'm not saying Tottenham were anywhere near that level yesterday, but it was okay. We're going to go and press when the ball goes. So I think Kolasinac knew if he went to Tierney, it was going to come back to him. Then he was under pressure and he'd end up going to Luiz anyway. So he thought, I'll go back to Luiz. The pass is shocking. David Luiz's body position, though, by the way, is so bad.
It's worse. I still think
Kolasinac is the main to blame here. But David Luiz should have got that ball. He's left himself so open that if the ball does come to the right side of his body, even if it was closer to him, he was absolutely fucked. Then to compound the misery, obviously Son bursts onto it. Son actually, his final touch before he shoots is actually a miscontrol, which then takes him away to decide completely what he's going to do in. Martinez, who played well again yesterday and has done very well for Arsenal, decided to lay on the floor and made the finish easy. And then from there, I thought Arsenal were the better side in the first half. And the second half was then a completely different game. So we went from having 48% of the ball in the first half, which is, it's nearly even, right? To having, I think it was 24% in the second half. That's a major shift. I haven't seen a game since restart where two halves has shifted so much tactically. I think what Mourinho decided was, and I don't particularly agree with it, but I do understand it. They were fucked with legs. We've seen Tottenham have major fitness issues at the moment. And he decided the best way to get at Arsenal was let Arsenal do Arsenal things, think they're good on the ball, etc., etc. Let them come, and we will attack on them quickly. Now, until about the 70th minute mark, really, it was all Arsenal in terms of we couldn't spring that counter attack into action, basically. And it's fine margins in the game, because if Aubameyang scores rather than hitting the bar, then I think they win the game. So it's very fine margins. What really impressed me was once we scored, I knew we'd won. Yeah, I knew we'd won. And in the final first 10 minutes, it only looked likely that we were going to score again rather than them equalise. And that's where I will give him credit, because in that moment, and even my dad, who trust me, he would throw Mourinho off a bridge, mate, even admitted himself, he was like, I knew we had it in the bag. They weren't going to break us down. And those are the points where I keep saying, show me something of what you are good at. Mourinho showed me in those final 10 minutes the correct way to see out a football match against a side which, in all honesty, has better technical players than us. Just a couple of shout-outs. I think Danny Ceballos was the best player on the pitch for me. Outstanding. Really, really good. I wish Tottenham had got hold of him. And it'll be interesting to see if Arsenal can make that move permanent or not. Massive shout out from a Spurs perspective, by the way, to Lucas Moura. 8 tackles, 1 in the game. He's had a lot of stick from Spurs supporters recently. I love him to bits because he leaves it out there, and he absolutely left it out there yesterday. You can't win a game of football with 11 Heung-min Sons. You could win a game of football with 11 Lucas Mouras. And his role yesterday in helping Ben Davies out against Bellerin and Pepe was a massive influence in stopping a lot of Arsenal's attacks. I just wanted to give him a shout out. I was very pleased, by the way, when Pepe went off. He's erratic, but he can play. I was pleased when he went off.
If he's the type of player, if he clicks, then you could see him being a 15, 18 goal a season kind of winger nipping in. Like the Salahs and Sterlings do, he's a goal-scoring, attacking player. I just felt, you watched that game from a tactical point of view. I didn't know to what extent Spurs in the second half set up to say, Arsenal, you have the ball, or you're just not good enough to get the ball back off them.
No, it was intentional. Whether I agree with it or don't agree with it, that was intentional.
Yeah. From my point of view, when I watched the game, I just think Spurs weren't good enough to get the ball back off Arsenal, and Arsenal actually passed the ball around better. So intentional or not, Arsenal were definitely the better team and should have won the game, in my opinion, from a technical point of view. But you don't deserve to win games if you defend like that and make sloppy, stupid mistakes. It didn't make me any more... I'm no more likely to want any Spurs assets, because I don't think any of the other games will be the same. Arsenal, on the other hand, now they've had a little bit of a ropey run. You're not going to buy their assets before Liverpool, but I don't mind them before the last two games of the season, because when they're in good form, they can steamroller some of the smaller sides 2-3-0 comfortably. So Aubameyang's still on the radar.
The only Spurs asset, if someone does want to look at them, would be Son. It would be the only player you'd consider. I assume if Aurier won't play on Wednesday, which, I mean, if he does, fair game to him, but you wouldn't expect him to, then I would just assume that Sissoko plays right back. And Sissoko, again, credit to Mourinho, playing Sissoko on the right of midfield was the right decision again to help out that. I told you I was really concerned about Arsenal's setup in that 3-4-3. And actually, defensively, we did quite well against it in terms of them having them double ups in those areas. We controlled it quite well. And what you ended up with Jules with Winks and Lissoso against Ceballos and Xhaka. In terms of, right, go and break us down. I was fearful when Ceballos had the ball. And eventually it got to the point where we're like, we've just got to stop this guy, because eventually he's going to open us up. And it always felt the fear to me that Ceballos was capable. Mm-hmm. I think he's a very, very good footballer. I actually think that partnership with Ceballos and Xhaka is really good for Arsenal at the moment. The reason they didn't win the game yesterday is not because of what they did or didn't do in the ball, although I think Arsenal fans would be very disappointed with what they did in the final 10 minutes or so once we went in front. But it's the sloppiness defensively. And there is a culture, if we go back to the second goal at the moment, and I don't know, I don't like it, where you've got people like Tierney marking Alderweireld. We've seen similar circumstances recently. I'm thinking of, I forget, who the Norwich player, Lewis, who was marking Craig Dawson in game week 34. And it's just a mismatch. Like, if he gets the run on you, you're done. That Tierney's not going to beat Alderweireld in the air. The theory is, what a lot of teams are doing is they're having this kind of zonal slash man-to-man marking at the moment. I'm seeing this more and more, where the zonal players are sort of lined up on the six-yard box, and it's their job, if it goes into their zone, to go and head it. A little bit like we'd mentioned, your goal against Chelsea was another case, wasn't it? Suchek against Azpilicueta.
Yeah.
And you then got players who aren't as good in the air man-marking. A lot of their job is very much to kind of block runs, etc., because Tierney is not going to beat Alderweireld in the air. The problem is when the delivery is that split yard or two around the 8-yard kind of line, just in front of that 6-yard box, if it's right like that and the player gets a run, it's unstoppable. And I would far rather have my best man-to-man markers, best headers, doing the man-to-man marking job personally.
Yep.
That's how I'd feel about it. But seeing this a lot. Going Spurs.
Well,
this
look,
is one to enjoy. At the moment, it's small victories for us, and we will listen. It's beating them, sorry, Chelsea, West Ham fans, I don't care about you, as I keep saying. Beating them is always worth celebrating, no matter what.
Of course, I mean they're your local rivals, and you don't need to apologise about that. It just happens to be that look, Millwall for us are not in the same league, or Chelsea's rivals, if it would be Fulham or...
You never know, mate.
Not in the same league, so...
If you fuck this up, you never know.
Yeah, that's true. Because they're not coming up the other way, I'll tell you that.
I wouldn't have thought so.
So, let's wrap up the last game. I mean, Leicester. Self-implosion.
Self-implosion. Oh,
I don't even know what to think about it, because Sunku's given me bloody a headache here by getting himself sent off and...
Oh, I had that weird combination, and some of the listeners will know this, when you've had a few too many and you've got emotionally involved in the game, where your hangover starts kicking in before you finish drinking. That was me for the second half last night.
What was wrong with Leicester? What's happened there?
I meant to talk about this after the Arsenal game, and for whatever reason we didn't. Was I really don't like this system that they're playing. I spoke before the Arsenal
three
game
at the
saying,
back with what Fuchs and
I really don't like it. I spoke before the Arsenal game, and they are missing some key players, to be fair, about getting back to what they were very good at in the first half of the season with, you know, that midfield three. And admittedly, Madison's not been fit, but then you Pryor, Tielemans, and then Didi should be absolutely fine. And then get people like close to Vardy, who he can play with and stuff. I think the three at the back for Leicester, it's not something they shouldn't play. But I think if you think of Chilwell and Pereira, then suddenly, we've spoken about this before, then you, with those two, you can absolutely play that system. With the two missing, it just doesn't feel right to me. Suddenly, they look ordinary to me. But that said, they were very, very comfortable in the game. And I had to keep double checking on what I saw happen from that first moment where Schmeichel, I mean, it's a freak, right? He hits Ndidi on the arse with a goal kick. You couldn't do it if you tried. Well, you probably could, but I mean, how that's happened, I don't know. And then suddenly it's a penalty and they've been back in it. And then you think, compose yourselves. And Siyunchu on the second goal, what is he thinking? What's going through his head to keep back? He keeps backing off. And I've watched it back several times to think he's thinking, someone's behind me. There's no one there, mate. Go to the fucking ball. He just lets your man come through and score. Was it Stanislas scored? Who scored the second? It was Solanke, wasn't it?
Solanke got the second and the fourth.
And think, then right. Even to the fact that Schmeichel part saves it and then it spins wickedly and goes against them. I mean, the ball almost stops before it hits the net. Wilson pushes Siyunku into the net. I don't know why, randomly. And then Siyunku loses his mind. He'd lost his mind 10 seconds earlier by not going and pressing Solanke. And from there, I mean, that could have ended 5 or 6.
Yeah.
They just never recovered.
What do you think it does for Bournemouth's confidence, though, now? Obviously, they might be going into the few games now thinking they're still in it with a chance. It could have been dead and buried by now.
Yeah, I think one interesting...
Still going to be difficult for them.
Can you have a look at the table, Serge, and tell us what the goal difference is of the guys down there at the bottom?
But from ours is about minus 17. Theirs is about minus 23. I'll just pull it up for you now. But that would have helped their goal difference yesterday. So to give you an idea...
One spin-off of the game Wednesday, obviously, is... Could Bournemouth go in with a philosophy of let's just keep this as low as we can?
Well, look, West Ham are minus 15, which is considerably better than the rest. Watford are minus 21.
Yeah.
Bournemouth minus 24.
Yeah.
And Aston Villa minus 27.
So Bournemouth are free off of Watford.
Correct.
They ain't going to want to get slapped on Wednesday. It's not to say that they won't get slapped at the Etihad. Of course they could. But what I'm saying is I don't think if they set up very defensive and you would expect them to do so.
They'll still potentially get slapped by Manchester City.
I don't think they'll necessarily change if it goes 1-2-0 is what I'm saying. I think they will continue playing the same way and try and keep the score as low as possible because obviously Watford have then got Man City the following week and you can have that hope that Watford suddenly are a bit more desperate, perhaps if they lose to you, and might do the opposite thing. It could be, actually, that that's the effect in both of Manchester City's next two games, where the opposition decide, we need to keep this as low as possible. If Man City beat Bournemouth 2-3-0, and Man City go and win at Watford 6-0, and they've had some big wins at Watford in the last few years, then that's level, isn't it, from a goal difference perspective?
Yeah.
And what's the difference in points? 3 points.
3 points at the moment, 31 to 34. It's going to be very tight.
So it could matter. Goal difference could matter down there. And therefore, it's one of I think the
saving grace is that our goal difference is so much better.
It absolutely, by the way, shouldn't put you off Manchester City assets because Bournemouth can defend as much as they want and might still get absolutely killed. What I'm saying is I don't think they're suddenly going to change the way they're playing during the game to try and get back in. And I think, you know, if they're 3 or 4 nil down, Howe is still going to be raging at them to keep it tight. I think the whole game is potentially, from that point of view, going to matter to Bournemouth, it's worth saying. Nathan Aki looks like his season's finished. I'd suggest probably he's played his last game for Bournemouth because, yes, I do still think they'll go down and he certainly won't be playing in the Championship next season, in my
Chelsea
opinion. And that is a monster blow. It didn't hinder them yesterday, but I think it might do for the remaining games as well. That is a huge loss. Although Lloyd Kelly, I don't know what he's doing on Vardy's goal, but he's done okay, generally, on the whole, having come into that team. And he can naturally sit in there. He has been playing left centre-half. Aki, despite being left-footed, as unusually the last few games, with Kelly been playing as the right-sided centre-half, which hasn't been helping him. So they'll have a better balance, ironically, with Kelly and I presume Steve Cook, who came on, will come back into the team. Leicester assets, just to cover briefly, because a lot of people probably think, Vardy, what do I do now? Well, you went in, you got your return. Congratulations. This is one of the reasons why I wasn't prepared to go to them, because now you're looking at it thinking, Jesus Christ, Sheffield United next, then Tottenham, then Manchester United. Do I want him when there are so many good value alternatives? Did you make the decision for one game week? Did you make it for more? If you made it for more, keep. But if it was a one game week punt, I think it's move away.
Even though
he's the league top scorer, I think move away.
Agreed, James, on that. Shall we do a few Twitter questions before we wrap up the show?
Yes,
see what
please.
The people are saying. This is an interesting one coming in from Matt Tams. Who's happiest, you or me?
Oh, me.
Definitely you. Definitely you. I feel like...
Definitely me.
Had Villa and Bournemouth lost yesterday, then I think it would definitely be me because our win meant so much for the relegation battle. But our win is put into the context of everyone else won, so it's not as valuable. And then Soyuncu getting that red card has screwed my bench boost up a wall. So there's no question in that. James is definitely going to be the happier.
It's definitely me. One game doesn't change everything, in my opinion, in terms of I would still want a different manager, etc. But I'm not that blind that I won't give him some credit where it's due. There were things yesterday that were pleasing. I think the game just as easily could have been lost as it's won. But in any case, whenever we play them, I don't really care how we play. I just want to win.
Chris Tan, he says, nice work at Sujan Shah, throwing everyone off the scent on Antonio. I didn't want to share his tired points anyway. Well, there you go. Yeah, if you take my advice, then you only have yourself to blame.
It's worth saying, it's not like Suj had Antonio and said to everyone else, don't buy him.
I mean, look, his ownership is still only 1.6%. And Antonio, if you look at his five-year history at West Ham, he's quite injury-prone. He's never played a full season. And more often than not, it's muscle injuries and stuff like that. It's fatigue.
To sum it up, in our differential team, Anthony Martial passed 20% ownership overnight on the Friday.
Yeah.
And so I said to you Saturday morning, we've got to sell him. Surely we've got to go for one of West Ham boys here. And we both agreed to go for Bowen.
Yeah, we did.
So there you go.
Yeah. Maybe we're not playing FPO in the simple way of look at the obvious thing, which is a forward positioned as a perhaps. Midfielder. Just stick with the out of position. Right, Jay Aravind, who will be your captain in game week 36 if it has to be from Man City? If it has to be from Man City, then I'm going Jesus.
I think I'm with that. I think I'm with that, yeah.
Chris Moffat says, do you have any plans for content over the summer break or are you having a well-earned holiday? Both is the answer to that one, surely, James.
Yes, there will be a week off in August. So generally, I won't even be turning my phone on. I won't be responding to anyone on Twitter, nothing. But it would probably just be 1 week and then back on it.
Abue, FPL Dabu. For this game week only, James, would you go with Sterling and Vardy or Mane and Jesus?
Mane and Jesus.
I'd agree with you, Mane and Jesus as well. Do you think Salah's due a rest? Look, Trent Alexander-Arnold got rotated. So do you think that he's rotating people in kind of sequence, isn't he, really? So Salah surely is due a rest at some point.
Well, I think that the wide-held belief was that Salah was going to get that against Burnley. My reasoning, and I said this to the patrons in Nike, who I wrote, and I said it on my deadline stream as well, was the guy has got a shot at the Golden Boot. On paper, this is the fixture he's most likely to haul in. I don't think he's going to be very happy with his manager if he gets left out. My opinion was, I wouldn't have put him at more than 80% to start, for example, because it looked like he was next in line. But it just felt like the wrong game to leave him out. He got a 4-day break to Arsenal and then a 7-day break to Chelsea. There is no reason for them to be rotating, in my opinion, from here on in.
And then last but not least, James, we need to talk about Chelsea very briefly because we have a number of questions around Chelsea. People thinking, is it worth doubling up or is the Norwich fixture a trap? So Dan, FPL Chancer, is double a trap despite the Norwich fixture given Sheffield United an FA Cup? Benny Blanco, for example, is asking, if we get early team news, would you punt on Pulisic or Willian and maybe even captain them? What are your? How do you feel? Assume we get early team news. Is one enough or would you double up? And do you think captaincy is a potential risk here?
I will have a second look at it. I mean, I haven't 100% decided I'm going for Jesus yet. I'm not going to influence any decisions that I've watched Manchester United tonight because, I mean, for example, if Mason Greenwood suddenly injured or something, I need to have a complete rethink of what I'm doing.
Sure.
But I think at the moment, I'm probably most likely to skip Chelsea. It might be that I decide, because transfer-wise, game week 37, if all my players stay fit, I really don't know what I would want to do with it to improve it if I go down the Jesus route. I mean, it's literally nothing I could do really to improve it without taking a minus four. I would still make a transfer. I don't do that burning stuff. But it could be that then I decide a minus four is worth it if I see something I like in that team news. But then I'm not going to make that decision. Pulisic would be the best shout, but I might just let it go. I genuinely might just let it go.
Yeah, it's not appealing enough to make you want to really go all in on it.
That's how I feel.
Especially because you have to unwind the situation afterwards as well. So there's no cheapies that you can pile in on and then leave them on your bench, like Foden or what have you from Man City or Greenwood. You can then leave them on your bench if you're getting an extra one. But there isn't any cheap, reliable assets there that are worth it at Chelsea. So there we go. That is our rundown on game week 35 without the Manchester United fixture. To everybody listening, we have a bunch more content coming at you this week. We have Sky Fantasy Football on Wednesday. James, what do we have tomorrow being Tuesday?
Clash of the Correspondents with FPL Loco Lord at Rotation FPL. Dan and Ted will be talking Liverpool and Chelsea. They obviously don't play each other till next Wednesday in game week 37, but we thought it would be better to concentrate on these two teams prior to the deadline. We can obviously then talk about Liverpool and Arsenal, and obviously we can talk to Ted on his thoughts of Chelsea against Norwich, which seems a big theme for everyone at the moment, and we'll get that out for you as early as possible tomorrow morning. Ted knows his Chelsea, mate. Doesn't mean he'll be right, but he'll have a good stab at what that 11 will be, I should think.
Indeed. And then Thursday we have a show
Sky.
As well.
Wednesday, Sky. Thursday, Ask James. Friday, full review of game week 36.
As we then
other
go
than
into
West Ham Watford,
yeah,
which is going to be 0-0, and they're going to throw each other bribes anyway.
No, 1-1.
Get, get your money on the draw now, kids, before the price disappears.
If Villa and Bournemouth lose, 100% I'm putting money on a draw there. So
you'll be too late. The bookies will skin the fuck off that, mate. If you want to do it now.
There we go. Gambling advice from James. Do stay tuned to all of the podcasts. Make sure wherever you're listening, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever it is, you hit the subscribe or follow or notification bell or whatever it is on that platform. We also have exclusive podcasts for all of our patrons every single day, from Q&As to quizzes to a whole lot more. So head over to patreon.com/planetfpl if you do want to join and get the extra shows while you can. And nothing else to add other than always stay safe. Good luck with your game week. Ciao for now.
Be nice to each other, everyone. Cue music, please, man child.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Podcast Network.